Okay. I didn't bring a drink down and I have a sore throat.
I've got one. I just made one. Do you want some of mine?
Yeah, okay.
I thought you wanted my drink. What are you doing?
Terrible. Anyone got a good title?
No.
Didn't realise we needed to do homework.
Oh dear.
Freezing balls is currently the only thing in my mind.
Freezing balls. I guess Joel is in a shed and you're in a freezing house.
Not very family appropriate, but.
Yeah. That's with a Z as well, so that makes it cool.
It doesn't make it cool, yeah. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Faithful listeners, this is the newly revamped Devon Dice Podcast 45. This episode is called Freezing Balls and it is brought to you by our faithful sponsor, Meeple's Corner. It was recorded on the 7th of February 2018. On tonight's show, Joel talks about heavy boxes with big hitters in it. Lewis rages about being fake, and Sam may have killed off number 9, but nobody saw it happen. Plus, stay tuned because we will announce the competition winner for Clank in Space! I'm your host, Joel Wright, and joining me tonight is...
Sam Freeman. Hello, folks.
Hello, everyone. It's Lewis Jones.
Yay, we've got both of them back this time.
Yeah, Sam's back in town.
Yeah, taking a break from sitting in my front bedroom lounge to sit in my front lounge kitchen.
With no heating.
So half your house has been dismantled then?
Yeah, the entire rear half of the house is basically gone. So, apart from the upstairs, but so that's freezing.
Are you basically sitting in your garden then?
I may as well be. Yeah, I may as well be. No, it's going on quite nicely, but we had our first big building regs inspection problem today, which is a bit annoying because the first time the guy came round, it was actually the apprentice of the real guy that's on our case. And I think he then realised that he'd cocked up and decided to come round with his apprentice for the second one and has decided to basically be quite severe in his judgment. Apparently my office needs a second door just in case there's a fire. And in case someone might in the future use it as a bedroom. So, but I find weird considering none of our bedrooms have got two doors. but never mind. Can't be reasoned with, apparently.
It's got a window, so anyway,
hasn't it? We were going to put a window in.
You see, can't not have a window.
Well, we can't have a window either because it would be on our boundary between us and the neighbour. So we couldn't have a window. So it's a bit
right
of a dungeon.
Theirs. Your window could be into their house.
Yeah. Well, our builder did have the idea because it's currently listed as a study or an office, which is the problem. And our builder said, well, why don't you just relabel it as a gun room? Because I'm going to put my gun safe in there. So we could call it the gun room, in which case you should only have one entrance to that room.
Do it.
But the problem is that it would seem a bit sus to go, oh, no, now it's called a gun room, and building regs would have to go, yeah, all right. I don't know if that would work or not.
If you're putting a gun locker in there, then they can't really do anything about it, can they?
Well, no, it's true. It's true. I might speak to the builder again tomorrow and see.
Yeah, although it would mean that in the future, if you were selling it, you couldn't change it to a four-bedroom house or whatever.
Well, it's only a case of getting building regs to sign off the plan. The current build. So our builder was also saying, like, well, wait till the building signed off and then just brick the door up. So it's just the expense of having to do it just because he wants to see it in the plans and everything. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. This isn't a show.
Anyway, games.
Expansion.
I used to see it all the time because I'm being a plumber myself. I just see it all the time. It's like, oh, what's this room at the back that seems to be being boarded up? Oh, yeah, that's been boarded up until building regs come along. And then they'll reopen it to have another bedroom.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
A secret bedroom. Yeah. So, yes. Cool. And so, bookkeeping. If you haven't heard or seen it pop up on your feed yet for your podcasts, Unhinged has returned. I found Lewis Holt, the other Lewis, and I couldn't shut him up. Literally sat there for nearly 3.5 hours while he talked. And then I whittled it down to 2 hours because I got sick and tired of re-editing. So, yes, very interesting chat with him, and good to have him back again. You guys heard it yet?
Yeah, he doesn't like talking to the rest of us, obviously, so I won't take it personally.
It just saves it all.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's good. It's always quite nice to hear the dulcet tones of Lewis raging about one thing or another. So, I'm halfway through the episode at the moment, so I've got the rest to look forward to on my walk to work tomorrow morning.
Nice. The thing was, we did it because he says, because he wasn't playing a lot of board games at the time, that he didn't want to come on the podcast normally. So I said, well, let's do a podcast on our own, and you can talk about whatever you like. And that was the whole general idea. But now I can tell you, he's back on the wagon. He's playing board games until he dies, basically, at this rate. he's mocking me because he's now played and finished Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
I wondered why you suddenly sent that text, that email going, let's finish Pandemic, guys.
And he's now started Season 2 just tonight and mocking me by sending me pictures. I was like, I hate you.
Apparently it's not as good, though, so it's fine.
Yeah. But so, yes, he's back. And then I've been putting up unboxing videos. I've had a few games arrive through the door, a couple of Kickstarters, and then a couple from Meeple's Corner. And I've decided, I'm going to do unboxings and put these up on the YouTube channel. So I've done Heavy Hitters was the first. That was a big box. And because it was big, I was like, oh, yeah, I can do this as an unboxing because not many people would be talking about this. So I've done that, and then I've done Pie Town, which I got from Christoph when I went on Friday. And then I've just put up today Power Ships, which was another Kickstarter. So
nice.
And there should be another one soon because I've just got through Stuffed Fables from Christoph.
Ah, nice. We saw that at Essen, didn't we?
Yes, we did. I actually spoke to the designer.
Did you at Essen?
Yes. What's his name?
Oh.
Jonathan someone. No, it's not. I've got it completely wrong. But I spoke to him anyway. And
did you get that on video?
No, I didn't. I just kind of stood there and I was looking at the game and this guy is stood next to me and he starts talking to me. And I was like, you're American. I said, can I ask what your name is? And he told me his name.
Jerry Hawthorne.
And I was like, I instantly recognised, yeah, that's the designer. So then we had a good old chat, because then I was talking to him about his other first game, Mice and Mystics, and I was showing him my paint jobs I'd done on the mice and that, and he was well impressed. So
there you go.
So yes.
It looks quite interesting, doesn't it? Stuffed Fables. It's kind of very, very family orientated. Very similar to sort of Mice and Mystics with your sort of miniatures, and you sort of kind of go through this sort of campaign, don't you, which is sort of when all the toys sort of come alive when the child's asleep, and the child sleeping is kind of like the timer of the of kind of each round as well, isn't it? Which looks quite interesting, and it's kind of very much set for sort of families and kids, but at the same time I think the thing that struck me sort of certainly at Essen, sort of seeing it all on the table, is a lot of the artwork and the models are quite dark, aren't they? And not as in like, oh, I can't see in the dark, as in quite creepy. Like even that the heroes look, like the teddy bear looks like a pretty creepy teddy bear, and things like that. And the doll especially, like, looks very weird. And the enemies are always kind of, they're a bit kind of Toy Story-esque, aren't they? You know, the original Toy Story, those kind of toys that are all kind of jimmied together. It'd be interesting to see what you think of it.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I definitely picked up to play with the kids, and I've watched a couple of reviews already, and they've all said this isn't really for gamers to play at a game group. This is for families. I mean, Tom Vassell's he was loving it. He was saying this is
the
best
game.
Yeah,
you get it at 9, didn't he?
I've played with my family for a very long time, so I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm hoping the kids will like it too, so, especially Isaac.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So,
yeah.
He did look at the back of the box, and it's got 7+ on there. And he's like, I can't play it. I'm only 6. was like, bless.
But, tough, you're
I'm
out.
Sure,
that's it. Sorry,
I'm
mate.
Sure you can play it. I'm pretty sure. So, yes. So I'm going to get on with my first game played. And I'm going to talk about Heavy Hitters, which I just said I've done the unboxing for. And it's from the Weta Workshop Studios. And if you don't know what they've done before, they're basically a special effects company for films. And they've made stuff for District 9 and the Tolkien films and things like that. And so they've created this Kickstarter. They created this board game using big mechs and buildings, and they put it on Kickstarter last year, and I just got it through the door, and it's a big game. I mean, from the unboxing video, you can go and have a look. You can see for yourself. It's not as big as Gloomhaven, I have to say, but it's still big, and there's quite a bit in there. And with the extras I got from it, makes it all much better. So Heavy Hitters is a sports game, really. Basically, it's post-apocalyptic. There's a lot of abandoned cities. The buildings need to be knocked down to clear way for new cities to be built. But instead of getting contractors in to knock this down, they thought, well, best way to do this is get a load of people to build some big heavy mechs, and they can fight each other in these cities and destroy the buildings at the same time. And then that's what they did. So it's basically a sports game. Either tag as many buildings as possible or be the last one standing. And it's really good. So you've got a big board with hexes on. You get a big mech each, which is your heavy hitter. You get a deck of cards, and you can actually construct a deck of cards to work your mech. And that deck of cards of 25 cards is your health for your mech. You move around the place, you try and play cards to shoot each other. And as you get take damage, you actually start discarding cards to a wound pile, I should say. And once all your cards are gone from your deck, your mech is out. It's elimination, but actually when someone is eliminated, the people remaining actually tally up how many cards they got left and other things, and whoever's got the most wins. So it's not elimination and you're sat there for a while everyone plays out. It's just game is over, which is quite nice. Or if someone tags four buildings by destroying them, they're the winner. And it's actually pretty good. I've played a couple of games, and it's not simple. There's a bit to it. There's about five phases. They're quite basic phases, except for when you get to the attacking and doing stuff like that. What's nice is you can bring out these other little mechs that you control that can do different things, like repair you. One does recon, and it's like another little combat robot, and they got their own little stats and things like that. And the buildings you get in the retail copy are made of cardboard with plastic bottoms and plastic tops. But the Kickstarter one I got is plastic buildings, which are quite nice. And I got a few extra models that come with it that you can bring in as an added extra to the game. So, I've actually enjoyed the plays I've had of it so far.
Sounds good. So what's the actual mechanism? Is it sort of like hand management then, is it? You mentioned the deck of cards.
It's basically your hand of cards basically let you do whatever you need. Not really, actually. Your hand of cards is basically your combat cards. You can move freely around the map. You have an energy bar. Each round, beginning round, you get about 5 energy. But if you want to move your mech, it costs an energy per square, per hex. So you can use it up like that. But your weapons also take energy as well. And so you've got that kind of balancing up of what you're going to do. Are you going to move? Are you going to use some weapons? And then tagging is basically if you're next to a building, you put a tag on of your color. And as soon as you've got 4 tags on it, the building's destroyed and you tag the rubble. And which is quite nice, because when you destroy the building, you lift off the cardboard bit and the roof, and then it's left with this rubble mound that was the stand before. And then you just tag the mound, and that's yours. So once you've got four of those around the map, you win.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Be worth a go.
Mm, definitely. And the mechs are pretty good, actually. I should say they're quite big, and they're already painted as well. Not great painted, but they're already painted.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You showed me, yeah. It wasn't the greatest kind of pre-painting job, was it? But, you know, it's
I think it's a primer, blank. One colour, and then some overlays on top.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. It's more than...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't awful. It's better than being blank, isn't it?
And the little, what they call the support units, the little robots you get, are... Yeah. Mostly shaded, ink shaded, so they do stand out a little bit. But
yeah,
it's not bad. I'm quite happy what I got with my money from that Kickstarter. So
yeah, cool. Maybe we'll play on Thursday.
Maybe. So news, Lewis, you're a bit of a can't get my words out. Dexterity champ at the minute, aren't you? You're loving your
I do like a bit of dexterity.
You've played Croconole.
I have.
Yeah. Well, how about having Croconole mixed with like curling, Canadian curling?
Sounds amazing.
It is amazing.
Well, I think wasn't curling invented in Scotland?
Maybe. But in Canada, they've done this. They've made a massive Croconole kind of map. And made of ice, and you basically throw curling balls on this Croconole board. In it, there's the link down there if you click on it.
I'll be the judge of this.
You'll be the judge.
Looks immense. Looks awesome.
Yeah.
It looks more like curling than it does Croconole.
But
they've just basically changed the. Instead of playing on a normal curling pitch with a long sort of path and then a scoring zone in the middle, they've basically made a giant Croconole board.
Yep.
And then it looks like people are throwing the little stones from curling, and there's people with brooms, and then there's the little pegs obviously in the middle just to kind of stop you getting in. And presumably there's the normal Croconole rules apply, so you've got to hit one before you do anything. That sounds amazing. Are they playing that in Canada?
Yep, it's up in Canada at the minute.
I need to go there.
Winnipeg. Mm.
That sounds like a place in Canada. I'm sure I've heard that before.
You played Croconole yet, Sam?
No. It's on my I really must play, but I just don't know anyone who's got the board.
I've got the board.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not a good board, but I got a board. I'll bring it up then. I didn't realise you not played it.
Yeah. We'll bring it up. Are you coming to the next Meeples Corner game day?
Maybe, actually.
That's meant to be, I believe, don't quote me on this, but I was talking to Chris about it, because obviously it's getting up towards International Tabletop Day in April. So I think it's around mid-April sometime, one of the weekends around April. Yet to be formally announced. I think it was something like the 14th of April, that weekend.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll bring it there.
Yeah, so, that seems like a perfect time.
Maybe once we get our Gloomhaven going again, I might bring it to you.
Oh, yeah. God. I'll try. We might need to be starting to think about subbing, but let me do some more digging on that one.
Yeah.
One of our numbers gone AWOL, so I'm gonna have to do some digging around and see what the state of play is with that. But yeah, we must.
We might have to get Lewis the bandwagon back in on it then.
Yeah.
Is that me?
No, the other one.
Oh, the other one. He sounds like he's all over the games at the moment. Going?
You've got it now.
Yeah, still not played another game yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not gone down well with the...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we both kind of enjoy it. It's just we've not really had a chance. We've been a bit busy and it's not quite had the same grab that other games have had, so we kind of have to be in the right mood for it rather than kind of always feeling like wanting a game.
Have you stickered it?
Yes.
So you might have trouble selling it on then.
I'm not interested in saying it. We'll play, it's fine. It's not like it's a disappointment.
Got a lifetime. Got a whole lifetime
to play. Exactly.
Exactly.
Might get knocked over by a bus next week.
Yeah.
bit morbid. But.
That's what I said to the Ever Lewis the last podcast. I'm going to try and kill one of you off at this rate.
Yeah, well, I better get playing a few games of Gloomhaven then if I want to get those in before I get hit by that bus next week.
Oh, dear. They could bury you in the box. It's that big.
That's true. That'd be pretty cool.
Have you seen that the mooted expansion for it is meant to be as big, if not bigger?
Really?
It's brilliant. I can't remember where I saw it. Now it was an article, I think it was on Tabletop Gaming Magazine website. There was an article about it, and he's working on it. It's not due to get any more info until 2019, but it's meant to be bigger than the base game.
The trouble is, it's like, I mean, I only really know one person that's made it through the campaign. And it's just like, I would love to know how many people have actually made it through the campaign, apart from the designer and his team. You know what I mean? It's that big. And I'm just talking.
There's a few people on like Board Game Geek who say they have. I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
With Board Game Geek. But.
I'm sure there are a whole bunch, but it must be the only thing you'll have played for months.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of us want to sort of play quite a lot of different things.
Mm. Yeah.
Even then, that's
together.
A lot.
Don't, that's the other thing.
Yeah, well, that's it. A lot of single dudes.
No families, no commitments. Yeah.
Yeah. If I didn't have kids, we'd have completed it by now. That's.
Yeah. If I didn't have a job, that would have been useful.
Yeah. Oh, all these great things that could make our lives better.
So, Lewis, do you want to rage about something?
Me? Never. So last Thursday we played a game of Blood Rage, didn't we? Again, that was quite good. That's obviously quite a popular game. For people who don't know it, it's a big kind of game released by, was it 2 years ago from Cool Mini or not?
About three now, I reckon.
Three, is it? Oh, gosh, it's been that long. I'm getting old. Cool Mini or Not, who are famous for their games with minis in, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got lots of very nice minis that Joel has painted up very well. And the kind of the base of the game is that it is an area control game. And it's kind of, you've got all these different parts of the kind of mythical world in sort of Scandinavia, and you're all kind of Vikings and different Viking tribes, and you're trying to score as much glory as possible through some, you know, having glorious deaths, and there's all sorts of bits of Viking lore kind of included in it. And traditionally I do not like an area control game. I think I've mentioned it before, I find games so frustrating where you spend a while setting something up and doing something quite, you know, kind of building something, and then it can just all be completely destroyed just by someone picking up some random card that they happened to get and you didn't, from some deck of other random cards. And I just find it all a bit, take that and a bit tit for tat, and it's just all just a bit annoying. I don't even enjoy it if I get that card, because I feel like I didn't really earn it and deserve it. I've just got some magical power card. But I quite like Blood Rage because the way in which the cards are distributed is essentially through a drafting mechanism, very similar to Seven Wonders, if anyone's played that, where you start off with sort of eight cards and you get to pick one of them and then pass that deck. That could pick one of them to keep and pass that deck of cards to the person on your left, and then the person on your right will pass you their deck of cards minus the one they've taken, and you keep sort of passing around. So everyone's sort of got a chance to sort of see what's going to be around in the round. So there's no massive surprises of some random superpower you didn't know existed. And also, you know, if you get a hand with amazing cards, well, you can only pick one of them. And so, you know, someone else is going to have one of the amazing cards. And it's also quite well built in that you can actually get a lot of points for dying and getting wiped out, as well as winning battles. So it's got that kind of good balance where actually if you get kind of completely scuppered, it doesn't actually matter, because you can kind of make hay out of that poor sunshine. And I think we had quite a good game, but it was kind of in danger of falling into my category of area control games that I will not play anymore on Thursday, because I think it was the very first round, Joel, the first card that he picked, so no one else knew that he had it, was some particular mythical creature that basically sort of completely sort of broke one of the rules of the game that none of the rest of us even knew sort of existed. So I had set my entire first round basically entirely dependent upon all my points coming from this certain event happening at the end of the round, and basically Joel's mythical creature just stops it basically, and moved it to sort of the event happened in a different area. So everything I'd been planning had been completely destroyed, and I was pretty frustrated, shall we say, at the end of that round when he suddenly whipped out that creature, and it looked like my entire setup had been destroyed, because the game's only three rounds anyway. There was a third of the game gone, and I'd missed out on most of my points and basically my whole setup. But then I kind of just tried to kind of piece bits together and make the most out of it, and it turned out to be an infinitely better strategy than purely by accident than my original strategy had been, and much to Joel's frustration, I managed to absolutely smash him.
Right, so let's clear some things up here. One, it wasn't the first card I picked. Nigel started with the card.
And well, I still didn't get to see it.
No,
I didn't still get to see it.
It was next to you, but you didn't get to see it. So, what was I going to say?
Two.
I can't remember now. But three, you. Not only did you smash me, you smashed everyone. Oh, two was that you bitched and moaned when I pulled that out, the last card. And that's a tactical thing. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to pull this out the last minute. And bang, there goes all your points.
It was,
I knew you were setting up for the points. So I deliberately held it back, and I deliberately waited to put it somewhere where you weren't. And I was like, yep. And then he literally threw his toys out the pram.
Like, I know, but
he wasn't upset. He was having a paddy.
Butt hurt.
I was. I think.
Sat there going, "I'm not playing now. That's it. I'm out."
I was so cross.
That's what's called being butt hurt.
Yeah. Well, it was just so ridiculous. Like, it just completely changed one of the massive rules of the game, and I didn't even know that rule could change. And I had set up my entire game, so all the cards that I'd picked, all the things that I'd done, were entirely reliant upon this thing happening, and then Joel's thing just comes along and completely changes it. That something I didn't even know could happen, and that's it. Brilliant, thanks. Fucking brilliant. What am I going to do for the next few games now? Like the next couple of rounds, because I've just lost a third of my income, so basically my points. There's no way I'm going to win. But then, much to Joel's chagrin, I suddenly was desperately trying to fix things and was trying to get, and these cards that kept them coming, I was like, oh, that would work with that one, wouldn't it? And then, oh, I could get, and then suddenly another one came up and I was like, oh, I could use that one with that one, and I could use that one. And suddenly it turned into an even better points machine than what I'd been originally planning. And I think I did I lap you twice on the points track, Joel? 200 points
possibly,
ahead of you?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I made an absolute points machine completely by accident in my anger.
Never
mind. Let that be a lesson to you, Joel. Don't make me angry.
Well, maybe I'll not pull my punches in the second round a bit then.
You did pull your punch a bit in the second round. That did help me quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I spotted that.
He gets upset about a game. You feel sorry for the bugger, and then he goes and flipping whops you, and it just, why do I do it every time? I just sit back and say, okay, I've upset him. I'm going to just sit back and just...
I don't get upset that often. It's pretty much only in area control games that I get annoyed.
It was funny when I pulled that out and you were like, what the hell is that?
I was furious. I was looking at it, that's it. That's my entire game down the drain. That's brilliant. And
I think that's one of the things about, that's the beauty about that game as well, isn't it? I think it's, I'm the same as you. I'm not a big fan of area control stuff. And for the same sort of reasons, like I don't like seeming to pick on other people particularly. And I don't like people picking on me particularly.
Yeah.
But in that one, I don't mind it because actually you can set yourself up to fail on purpose. Mm. And I like those kinds of plays in Blood Rage. You can build a strategy around not actually winning combats. And I think that's a really clever design choice for a kind of Euro come Ameritrash hybrid. But it does set itself up for these kind of glorious kind of boom type moves. It's just kind of like how everyone stitches.
Yeah, that was what Joel did to me. Most people, everyone was sort of sniggering, seeing how angry I was, and everyone was desperately trying to hide their laughs and smiles. I say desperate, they weren't hiding them that much.
If anyone's wondering what it is, it's Fenris the Hell Dog. Is it Fenris
the Kickstarter exclusive made-up?
Yeah, so you can't get it from the retail. It is Kickstarter exclusive.
Yeah, so don't worry. If you go and buy it in a shop, you won't get that crap piece that ruins the game.
It's an awesome piece. It might not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would have been very good. Yeah, I had all sorts of plans where I was going to get you back, and I realized I could make more points.
If I had a choice over that and probably a couple other cards in there, it's not one of my top picks, but
no,
it was the best of a bad bunch.
But you played that game with me before, so you know what I like to do. So you knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah, but everyone does that. Ragnarok. I'm just going to sit in this village or this province and like wait until Ragnarok comes and.
Yeah, but the problem was is I'd augmented it with another like four or five cards where I had multiple ships, and then when the ships got killed, they were going to give me extra points, and I had extra cards that I got the ships back, they were going to give me extra points, and then when they didn't die, so I didn't get the point. They didn't get the points of them coming back. I didn't get anything.
Yeah,
it's annoying.
Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable scenes.
Never mind.
Unbelievable scenes.
Never mind. Following on to
it all worked out well.
What's everyone's thought on Hate? The new Call Mini or Not Kickstarter that's just about finishing now as we're recording. Any thoughts?
I'm not a big miniatures gaming player anyway. I think Blood Rage is one of the few that I do like just because it's not really a miniatures game. It's just a Euro game with miniatures in it. Mm-hmm. Whereas this looks like a proper full-on miniatures-y, smashy game. I don't really mind the theme and stuff as much because it's obviously based on a different property, isn't it? But I think it looks fab, like all CMON games do, but it's not a game I'm interested in playing.
No.
Yeah, I think a lot of Call Mini or Not games kind of sometimes miss the mark in terms of game. I think if you're someone who loves miniatures and has the skills to paint miniatures like Joel, not me, then you could, you know, get easily get your money's worth just from painting their really high quality, great miniatures. And you know, get a bit of fun out of playing some games with them. But a lot of them, I mean, I think Blood Rage is probably the only exception. The others I've played have been a little bit below par, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind the swearing. It was quite funny in a way. I just looked at it and thought, I'm not going to play this. As you said, the miniatures look great, but the kind of theme and the grossness to it, I was just like, I'm not going to get this to the table a lot. It's just going to sit there on a shelf and gather dust. And a bit sad, but never mind.
Plenty more games. Plenty more games out there.
Yeah. And I think it's not done as well as they expected to. I mean, it's only just hit the million mark where, like, Blood Rage done nearly.
Only just hit the million.
Well, yeah, but Blood Rage did 4 million.
Yeah, no, I know. They normally get very, very high amounts. But that's because they've got so many miniatures in them. Like, it's so expensive to back their games. They need about 10 backers to hit a million, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Plus, I think they're victims of their own success a little bit as well. I think it's just because their stuff just costs so much money.
Yeah.
I think they've gone back to that pool quite a lot. And I think maybe this one's just one too many based on the theme and the art and stuff. They've reduced the buyer pool a little bit for it, I think. So it's still done spectacularly well, but people bought a lot of money on things like Rising Sun, and they're only just receiving Rising Sun now. And how many people are kind of going to want to go straight in for another big box miniatures game when they haven't even received the next, you know, the one they've already backed for £300-400 or something.
Exactly. And speaking of Rising Sun, did everyone see the oops fail that Call Mini or Not did with Rising Sun?
Yeah, go on, tell them all about it.
So for those people who missed it, one of the extra Kickstarter characters, the one of the stretch goals they had was a, because Rising Sun's obviously, it's got similarities to Blood Rage and sort of area control aspects. And one of the sort of characters that you can get was a character called Kotai, I think that's how you pronounce it. And it's obviously like you see in Blood Rage, they pick all these different things from the mythology. So Blood Rage is a lot of things from Viking mythology. So they've picked a lot of sort of characters from sort of Japanese mythology. However, it looked like their research team made a little bit of an error, because essentially the character of Kotai does not exist in Japanese mythology. In fact, it was a couple of New Zealanders who put their friend on Wikipedia as a creature from Japanese mythology. And Cool Mini or Not just went on Wikipedia to find the name of a creature from Japanese mythology and picked the fake entry from these New Zealand guys that they'd put in about their mate. And so basically their mate is now immortalized in a game from Cool Mini or Not, in the game Rising Sun, as a playable character. And just generally a bit embarrassing for Cool Mini or Not, really.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they there's a lot of supposition that these guys did it deliberately, thinking, oh, they're making a game, let's get ourselves in it. It wasn't. It was just these two New Zealand teenagers kind of dicking about and adding loads of stuff to Wikipedia, just messing around. And then they accidentally got picked up. And it's just one of those glorious little mistakes that's happened. It kind of makes me think that, because you look at the, because it was a Kickstarter stretch goal, wasn't it? The monster. Yeah. And you wonder whether it was a case of, oh, crap, we need more. Which ones?
Yeah.
Let's get some more Japanese. Right, what have we got? And they'd gone back to the, they'd obviously done all the ones they knew about and were sort of casting about to try and find something vaguely Japanese they could go for. Yeah.
And they picked a New Zealand guy.
So this is like one of those great unfortunate events that have happened. And I hope Simon send this guy one of their the game.
Oh, they have. Thing. Yeah, they made a big thing about it. Yeah, yeah, they've given him the games and they've had a little bit of a publicity and stuff around it.
How many of people now are going to go and find out what the next Cool Mini or Not game is? They're going to make up characters on Wikipedia and that just to
Well, I imagine it's going to get highly sort of critiqued in its historical background, so they better make sure that their research is up to date next time.
Yeah, exactly. So, cool. That's funny. When it first popped up, I thought it was a joke, and then I was reading for it, I was like, oh no, they actually have messed this up. Well, not messed it up, but kind of made a little error.
So how much did Rising Sun make on Kickstarter? It was millions,
just
wasn't it?
4 million.
So 4 million. So, I mean, you'd think with just over 4 million in the bank, they could have asked a Japanese professor at a university to have a phone conference, paid him, 100-200 quid or whatever dollars, to actually get the right information, wouldn't you? It's not that hard. It just seems very silly, doesn't it?
And I mean, I'm pretty sure, even reading through it, it's like they had the name and that, but they had no images or anything like that. Well, I mean, it's from Legend kind of thing, but they had no kind of drawings or anything of what it could look like.
They made up this
creature. Yeah, they
completely made it up. Yeah.
I think it resembles another character from a comic book or TV series. Monkey. It's another one.
It does kind of look like a monkey.
I'm sure it's a TV series, and then they made a video game. When I was in my video game era, there was all of this talk about how they took this character from a TV series and put him in a video game. And it's based...
It's one of those kitsch kind of 80s type things, wasn't it? They've just remade it. I never watched it. It was a little bit before my time. Monkey and the something or other. Oh, I can't remember what it's called now. Some sort of weird anthropomorphic people turn into animal type weird things.
Maybe I'll look into it a bit more and see if I can drop it in. Hello there, Joel in the editing booth. And what I was thinking was a TV program, and there's been films and things like that called Monkey King. and I never watched any of them. But I remember the video game that came out that was on 360 and PlayStation 3 called Enslave Odyssey to the West. A very good game at the time. I quite enjoyed that, and there was a lot of hype over it. And Andy Serkis does the motion capture for Monkey in it. So check it out if you want to go retro a bit. Wait. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's what I think. It's just funny.
Yeah, it's not a mistake they're likely to make again. We'll see.
So I just said I got my I got actually a couple of orders through from Meeple's Corner, and because I'm now working in Plymouth, I'm like, can you send it to me now? Because I can't get to Crediton that often.
What?
So it's pretty cool actually, because now
you pick up all my games.
I know. I picked up your Chartstone, don't worry.
Oh, you have a view. Okay, yeah. Good.
So I had Stuffed Fables sent to me because he got one cancelled on an order. So I said, I'll have that. And yeah, you can track your order now, which is quite fun. Meeple's Corner. Sam, you just posted up saying there's lots of offers going on Meeple's Corner.
There were.
No, they've gone off. They've gone off now. I went on literally 2 minutes too late because I saw the email 2 minutes too late and went, oh no.
Yeah, really? They don't last long. Yeah, they don't last long.
Is there anything good on there?
Yeah, there's still some good ones. Just in case anyone wants to know, there's good ones. There's good savings to be had. You've got Animals on Board, which never really hit as much splash as it was. That's about half price at $8.95. Century Spice Road for $20.50. One of last year's Essen releases, Dragon Island, for £25. Gekido Bot Battles. I don't know much about it other than it looks cool. But it was $52.95 as the normal price. It's down to $29.95. Some of the sold out ones that were really good though. There was My Village, the dice version of Village, which was down to $12.95.
No way.
Saltlands, which is one of Kickstarter, is really sort of artistic style Kickstarters from a couple of years ago, was less than £20. So yeah, there were some really good ones.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at it now. There's some good stuff.
And don't forget, he's got a big list of pre-orders up. And if you do pre-order, you don't have to pay anything. You just wait until it actually arrives in the shop. He'll let you know, and you can decide whether to pay for it there and then and get it sent to you. So check out the pre-order list. It's dangerous if you're like me or Sam.
Yeah.
Or me. I've got a pre-order from there at the moment, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Until kid pre-orders, this news in. The new expansion for our favourite game, Sam, is just been announced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course I had to talk about it. I think I may have put up an article about it as well on the Facebook page and stuff. But Clank: The Mummy's Curse is going to be released around April or May time, I believe. And that is the one I have on pre-order. Shh, don't tell the wife. That's I couldn't help myself. As soon as I saw that was up, I was like, "Yep, I've got to be having that." Basically, it is an expansion for the original Clank. So much like Sunken Treasures, it will be a new double-sided board, new set of cards, etc. But it's all based around Egypt and the pyramids. And this one's actually quite interesting. It's something we sort of hypothesized as a potential thing for an expansion, and it's going to have a mummy creeping around the board for you to avoid as well, which sounds really cool.
This is one of my expansion ideas when Clank first came out, and I was like, you could have a Minotaur. That's my idea, having a Minotaur catacombs. And it's turned into a mummy, which is just the same. That works. I'm happy with that.
Bill, you should be a board game designer.
I should be. I kind of wish I'd emailed my ideas off to him and I could have claimed some kind of knowledge for that. But
at least a copy of The Mummy's Curse.
Well, yeah. But so, yeah, I'm excited. I love the colours. The colours are nice, like kind of purpley pink. I don't know. Weird, I know. But anyway.
Yeah. It's basically just more boards for original Clank. The original Clank game. It's an expansion for the original, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you just need to get Clank in space. Then you don't need more boards because the boards are already modular
More Clank.
Already
more
tighter
Clank.
And already better. Clank. We don't need any more. No,
more Clank.
Clank in space is enough. Done.
No, more Clank. No. And I'm looking forward to expansions. For I reckon before the end of the year, we're going to get news of the first Clank. I reckon by Essen, even there'll be an expansion for in space as well.
Definitely.
Don't need it.
More Clank. More Clank.
They don't need more Clank.
Definitely need more Clank.
Clank in space peaked. Clank series peaked at Clank in space and just need to stop.
No, they don't. Keep farming it.
It's gonna be like the American Office, isn't it? You know that remember that TV program when you know they started off just by having the same as the British one. The British one stopped and it was still funny and became legendary, as opposed to the American Office where they just keep going until.
Oh, but that's Americans. They don't know when to stop until it's dead.
The only problem I've got with the new expansion is that the nice insert that John made for me is not going to work anymore. No. I've actually, other friends of the show, Richard and Joe, they've given me the box for Sunken Treasure so I can put it back into its box. so I can have the two expansions side by side when I get the new one. So, because it's got to look right, isn't it? You know, let's face it. So
definitely. Definitely.
But anyway, there you go. That's the most exciting news of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
So going on to that, you can now go to Meeple's Corner and pre-order your copy of Clank Mummy's Curse or any other game that he's got on his pre-order list. So pop along there and have a look. Kickstarters. Sorry, I lost where I was then. Kickstarters. So I'm back in a couple at the minute. Are you back in any, Sam? You're not.
I've got only one. It's the expansion for Valeria Card Kingdoms. It's the only one I've got going.
Right. January just seemed to be a tidal wave of Kickstarter releases. I was like, what do I back? I mean, Nemesis has just finished, which is a kind of alien spoof kind of board game.
That looked really. I very nearly went for that, but I love the original Alien films, but I didn't in the end. I can't remember exactly why. I think I was feeling poor. As it was post Christmas.
It's
not too bad. I mean, if you didn't do any add-ons, which is hard not to, it's not bad price. But I heard the downtime between turns is quite big.
So, Anyway.
At one at the minute, it was released this week. Agents of Mayhem. Now this is actually from a computer game called Saints Row, I believe, or part of it. It looks good. The intro thing was good. The price was good. Trouble is, there's no reviews or there's no playthroughs of this game at the minute on their site. And if they don't sort that out, I don't think people will be keeping their pledges, because, I don't know, you just can't back a game like this and not know how it really plays out. But
difficult to tell from the even from the description of the board game on the Kickstarter. It's very difficult to really get a feel for how the game plays. Yeah. But it is good. It is easy to see how it looks, and it does look pretty damn cool, actually, with the 3D board and everything.
Mm. Was Agents of Mayhem the one who, one of the designers, the guy who did photosynthesis?
Don't know.
Right. I feel like I've seen that, and I feel like that's what it. So that's the one I'm picturing.
No, I don't think so.
Hasty Googling.
Yeah.
So Agents of Mayhem, of Pride of Babylon, sub tagline, is basically a team versus team skirmish board game, 2 to 4 players. The game is played in a modular 3D board, which is fully destructible. You and your opponents will play through a radiant story where every choice you make will affect. That ripples throughout the campaign. Play as either Legion, the organization of supervillains who have taken over the world, or as Mayhem, a band of anti-heroes who will do whatever it takes to stop Legion. So, as you can tell, it's got miniatures, and it's got a 3D city board. Kind of reminds me a bit like of Meeple's Terror Meeple City or Rampage. Yeah.
and Burgle Brothers as well. We've got those 3D kind of buildings.
Yeah. So basically, there's just cardboard floors on stilts stacked up on top of each other. And yes, you can blow up these buildings and they collapse. And can probably fall on top of people. Usual thing, moving around the board, using up your resources to shoot, jump, do whatever. It's got a nice little part where you get cards for upgrades and they actually slot into the board, like proper upgrading kind of thing. So it's a two-layered player board, if you know what I mean. Trying to figure out what it's like. Completely gone out of my head. Like Scythe player boards kind of thing. So you've got indents in the board where stuff can go. And it's doing very well, actually. Even though I said it's not got reviews or a thing, it's nearly hit £100,000. And it's got about 20 days to go. No, 19 days to go. And you can get a copy with all the stretch goals for $90, which is about £64.
So I think the one thing in terms of their pedigree, they do have a basis in video games, but it's actually Academy Games, and they're the ones that did 1775 Rebellion, Freedom the Underground Railroad, Thief, Mare Nostrum, and recently 878 Vikings. So I think I think it's their, you know, it's just that this is the first sort of sci-fi-ish type game they've done. Most of their stuff's very historic based normally. So that's probably one of the things that threw it. Yeah. But it makes it even more weird that they haven't actually got any sort of gameplay kind of videos and stuff. So hopefully that's the sort of stuff that will come through as the campaign progresses.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've got it all at the bottom, what I've done. And they're working with Volition, which is the video game company that make the game, to bring this game out. So
it does look very cool. Mm. Yeah, it does look pretty cool. Yeah.
So, cool. Sam. What have you been playing? I missed Page Quest. Sorry. Carry on.
Because I don't get what Page Quest is anyway. Do that in a minute. Don't understand that one. The only game I've played I've played a few games recently. I've played quite a lot in January, but the one I wanted to talk about is actually one of the newer releases called Favelas, which is from WizKids. And it's a kind of tile stacking game, a little bit like Number Nine. So in Favelas, the idea is that you are tasked by the city of Rio to beautify and refresh the townships, the favelas. If you can picture it, it's the town, the sort of buildings that are built on the sides of hills and very, very ramshackle and whatever. But the idea in this one is that you start with a fixed board of five hexagons, and each round you're drawing from a pool of double hexagon tiles, so two hexagons joined together on a single tile, and you have to stack them on top of your five hexagon board. And the idea is you're trying to get sets of colors, or in order to control the most of a set of colors. There's I think it's five in the game, and at the end of each year, effectively, so there's three stacks of these tiles to make up the years, and the end of the years is the end of the stack when this tile, anyway, the tile gets turned over. And the point is that you keep drafting these tiles, put them on your board. Whoever controls, say, the most reds gets the number of points denoted by the red council die on the board. The most blues gets the blue dice, etc. Now, the thing about it is you can manipulate the dice to manipulate how much those are worth. So,
like Biblios.
Yeah, so the idea is if you you can trigger a change of, say, the red die by covering a red tile with another red tile, or a blue die with blue tile with a blue tile. And the idea being that you know, those that are going to have the most blues want to make that number go up, and the ones that aren't going to be controlling those are going to want to make that score go down. So it's a really interesting game of sort of give and take, tug and, you know, bit of pull, bit of tug, tug and, no, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh God, that sounded terrible.
You're
always around.
Who are you tugging?
It's a bit tug of war kind of style, of, you know, trying to get that dice number up or get it down. And so it's a really interesting game of controlling. Not only where you're building and how you're building, because it's a bit like Number Nine, where you can't build over empty space. You can only stack on top of existing tiles. So the higher you build, the more limited your choices might get as a result of your choices of where you've put the tiles. So for me personally, it's killed Number Nine entirely for me. Wow. I have no desire to play Number Nine now, because Favelas is it's more colourful and it's more interesting.
Yeah, it's the same, it sounds really, really good. I love the number 9. I've played it a few times and really, really like that game. And I also really like that dice kind of a scoring manipulation, that sort of mechanism in Biblios as well. So it sounds like a really interesting game.
Yeah, it's I mean, a quick shout out to the designer, Chris Bryan. It's actually his first published design. He, if no one else has listened to it yet, I think I've talked about it before, but one of my favorite podcasts, other than this one, of course, is is Bored with Life, and they do a great RPG podcast, which I'm utterly addicted to. It's just loads of fun to listen to those guys playing Dungeons and Dragons. But he's one of the cast and crew on there, and it's his first design. His second one's out now as well, the Dragon Ball Z board game that came out not that long ago, and he's got another couple lined up in quick succession. So he's, but I think this one is his first design that's published. I think it's actually a really solid, really solid game. The art's actually done really well as well. It's by Quan Chai Moria, who did Flipchip.
And Catacombs.
Catacombs, yeah. Yeah, so really good.
I like his art. Yeah.
And the component quality, actually, for damning with faint praise for WizKids, for WizKids, the component quality is really good. The tiles are really chunky and solid. The dice are really nice and chunky and clear. Even my color blindness isn't too much of a problem, despite having a red and a green dice. So it's really good. It's a really pretty, nice, solid game. Plays relatively quickly, about half an hour. So it's right in that sort of number 9 with a bit of a plus to it kind of sign, kind of vibe. Highly recommend having a look at that one.
Yeah, nice. Sounds very good. Yeah. I might look into that.
Cool. So Page Quest is another Kickstarter that I've it just popped up today, and it's basically a print and play game from Boards and Dice. So you basically, it's like this campaign adventure game they're going to bring out. You pay $15 and you'll get stories sent to you every month or so, and it's literally, you print out this piece of paper, you get some dice together, you got a character sheet, and you're rolling dice and allocating them to spots to play through this adventure. It came up this afternoon. I backed it just to check it out.
Of course you did.
It's only $15 as well. And
exactly.
A sheet of A4.
A sheet of A4. All right, mock me all you like.
Don't forget the ink costs.
Have
you included the ink costs in that, Joel? That's the key part.
I can print it out at work, so it doesn't cost me anything. Yes. Just don't tell the boss.
But they don't listen.
No, they won't listen. Yes, it's actually from a print and play game called A4 Quest. And now Boards and Dice are bringing it out, and they're vamping it up and giving it some cool artwork and expanding on the idea. And if it can get enough traction and more interest in it, I reckon there'll be lots of adventures to follow on afterwards. So I'm just going to keep an eye on it and see how it does. And
might just get you to print me a copy.
No. Nope, my game. Not sharing it with anyone. And I play it on my lonesome.
It does sound quite good. I'll be interested to see how it goes.
Yes, that was Page Quest. Check it out. Yeah. Got about 20 days to go, so you're okay at the minute.
Yeah, well, speaking of games that we've ordered recently, I have recently pre-ordered one of the Sentry games. For those people who don't know, there's a whole series of games, there's three of them, from Plan B Games that are coming out. And the first one's been out for a little while now, and it's called Sentry Spice Road. It's very much a kind of intro type level game with sort of some basic hand management and sort of resource management. So it's very simple. People sort of describe it as a bit of a Splendor killer. Seems to be very sort of that sort of level of a sort of Splendor. But what's interesting about it is that Spice Road, and then the new one that's coming out, there's another one called Sentry, Eastern Wonders, and that has a bit more area control to it, although it doesn't look like the classic. But what makes the Century series quite exciting is if you own Century Spice Road and then you buy Century Eastern Wonders, you think that you've got two games, but in fact you haven't, because in Century Eastern Wonders there's a second manual. You've got one rule book and you've got a second rule book for a third game, and that uses the components from both Century Spice Road, the first one, and Century Eastern Wonders, the second one. So you've got those two games, you bought those two games, and you've actually got three different games that you can play, that uses sort of the components and elements of sort of each of the two games to get sort of slightly more complex. So where you sort of start with what are some quite basic games, they then merge to make even more sort of complex games. And there's also going to be a third one in the Century line that'll then add a third game on it, or it's in its own right, but then combined with the other two will then make another game, and you end up with a sort of bigger and more complex game that comes out of these sort of three games. So you end up with sort of all these different multiple games that can then sort of accommodate different sort of levels of player and sort of and your kind of allotted time that you've got as well, which looks really, really interesting. There's a big catch that basically halted me and meant that I basically very nearly didn't sort of pre-order this, and that was the theme. So the theme is yet another trading of exotic spices, pushing little wooden cubes about, decidedly to make deals. It's just decidedly uninteresting. And
I'm yawning as you talk about it.
Exactly. Like, could they make it sound any worse? So what they happened to do is, just as a little sort of a experiment, and they wanted to sort of re-theme it. And initially, Plan B Games just had this that they were going to a different version of Century Spice Road called the Golem Edition, which has got a much more sort of manga theme. And see, and to my mind, fits the whole theme a little bit better, where you're sort of collecting these resources to, instead of doing deals at the top, you know, the game's identical but the art's different, instead of doing deals you've got these pictures of all these really interesting sort of manga themed kind of golems, sort of machines, or sentient machines that you then, you know, use to fix them up and get them going. And the artwork is really fantastic, really, really interesting, kind of like, you know, these kind of like sentient kind of forges and windmills, and kind of, as well as your sort of traditional sort of warrior ones. And those are the kind of things that you're collecting, and makes much more sense, looks so much nicer. But there's a massive, massive problem in that they're only releasing the first one in the series in that Golem Edition. So you're kind of torn between, do I want the really boring theme yet again, or do I want the really interesting theme, but I'm going to miss out on all the great whole idea of the series of the games, where they then go in to combine to make even more games, and you kind of lose that massive advantage. So it was just like, it's just so annoying and so frustrating when I sort of saw that. I mean, in fairness to Plan B Games, originally it was only ever going to be sold at sort of conventions and on their website, the Golem Edition. But now it's gone out to retailers, so sort of everyone can get their hands on it. And so they sort of changed their mind about that. And they may well, in the future, you know, change their mind about making the other two, or there's even talk about them making two other games that will follow on from the Golem Edition, but that will work in the same way as the others, giving you the extra games, but at the same time will go down a different route, so there'll be a completely different series of games in their own right. But I find it so frustrating. So I basically decided that I wasn't gonna go for it. And then I thought, I don't own Splendor, and it would be good to get a copy. And we got offered a copy on for review, so I thought, well, okay, if I'll pick it up for review, but I'd be very loath to sort of spend my money on it, because I almost feel a little bit cheated, that you're kind of missing out on the other games that you could potentially play just because you want the infinitely more interesting artwork. But what's crazy about the whole situation is that apparently Plan B was saying that they had originally hoped it would all be sort of the Golem kind of artwork, but they were told by distributors, when they tried to sell it to them, distributors were saying, oh no, we don't just want another fantasy themed kind of games. What we really want is trading games. People love trading games. There's not enough of them around. And it's like, what, are you kidding me? Like, I just get one more game about trading little wooden, coloured wooden cubes. Then, you know, I mean, there's some great ones that are around, but I mean, come on, that's not an original theme. And you look at the artwork of Golem Edition, truly original, truly interesting, and you're just like, oh, for goodness sake. And so that's how this kind of whole debacle's come about, by distributors saying to Plan B, well, we won't order it if you're going for down the Golem Edition. And of course, then they've all had to backtrack because everyone wants the Golem Edition. And when it was limited, people were spending hundreds of pounds trying to get that copy. So Plan B went, well, fine, we'll release it. But there's still no plans to make the other two in the series yet. So it's a bit tricky because it sounds like a great game for me, especially sort of for family sort of level, with the option then, if you get the other ones in the series, of making it more complex and interesting. But it's just it's what put me off is it's just so frustrating that you can't get the theme. And I never thought theme would be an issue that would stop me in games. It's kind of the last thing I really think about. But when the Golem Edition is so interesting, in my opinion, when you look at the artwork compared to that, it's just, yeah. So it's a bit of an interesting kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm the same. I agree. It's I really like the Golem Edition more because I think so. I like the game, but it's such a dry, snoozy theme. There's no theme. It's everyone said, oh, it's like a Splendor Killer. Well, it only kills it in terms of the gameplay because it's exactly the same problem of having no theme applied to it. And the Golem one, at least the artwork lifts it to a slightly different level for me, but. I think the issue here, and you're talking about the distributors sort of saying about it, I think it's because the market for the game was always originally European. And when it was the original, who was it that were printing it before this? It was Plaid Hat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they were obviously a westernized market, and they had the clear idea of having a sort of European version, which was essentially Century Spice Road, and then they had Golem Edition, which was going to be the slightly more westernized kind of fantastical one. Mm-hmm. That's where that kind of born out, wasn't it? They'd obviously gone down a certain level with development, and they had the artwork already for the most part. So they obviously thought, well, let's just release it and see. It's a shame to waste it all. But I'd love to see how popular Golem Edition is, because it wouldn't surprise me if, 3 or 4 months down the line, they go, oh, and actually there's going to be Century something or other, Eastern thingy. Golem Edition now too.
It wouldn't surprise
me in the slightest.
Well, that's what people are sort of hypothesizing. They haven't announced anything, and they've sort of said, well, we'll just sort of see how things go, because they did initially say it was only going to be sold on their website, but then they backtracked on that, and it's now
precisely
gone out to distributors. So they may well backtrack, but there's talk that it may well end up being, like I say, a whole new series. So you'll still get your kind of get two series out of one, which is a nice idea, I think.
Because originally it was going to be called Caravan.
Yeah,
that's right.
Gosh, could they make it sound more boring?
Well, I think maybe that was just maybe a project name, code name. But then I think it was going to be like Caravan, Spice Road, and Caravan.
Well, yeah.
Golem Edition.
That's all the picture on the boxes, isn't it? But with Century, it kind of moves through time as well, because you start with Spice Road, it's initially with sort of, like you say, the caravans and camels moving through the original sort of Spice Road up from sort of East Asia up through Europe. And then in Eastern Wonders, it's kind of the age of sail. And so there's much more about boats and setting up trading posts and things.
I think really it came down probably to cost of printing the same game twice with different art and different thing. And they probably took a survey of people what they thought would be best to do, and most people probably came back and said, well, like trading in the Mediterranean, there's a safer theme because it's kind of generic,
everyone knows it,
it's generic, it's safe, it's things like that. Golem is kind of a risk because not really many people like fantasy or like that kind of thing, so they said, let's just go with a generic thing. Then there was like, oh yeah, we'd do the Golem as a special edition and sell it like that. Yeah. But yeah, people want what they want, and when they know they can't get something that's hard to get, they'll pay money and it becomes demand. That's when they think, oh, actually, let's release this kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a diehard fantasy fan, I like a bit of fantasy, but if you just have a look at those cards, they're so interesting, the way they've kind of each individual Golem just looks so, it's so crazy. I'm just looking at them, I'm just thinking, gosh, that's it just makes it so much interesting, and it's so much better that I don't know how you could ever come to the decision that yet another cube pushing trading spices is yet another good idea. Like.
Yeah, definitely. So we got a Golem edition arriving. So when that does arrive, expect a review from Lewis.
There shall be a review. I imagine I'm going to talk a lot about the cards and what and how beautiful they are.
And Christoph said he'd lend us the Spice Road edition so you can compare.
Oh, that was brilliant. I was going to ask if he'd do that so I can compare, contrast directly.
Can do that.
Bab.
Let's have a quick chat on a topic I want to put forward. And basically, following the rules, even if they make you tear up the game.
Every time, 100%. End of discussion. Rules are there to control the fun.
So I'm talking about, I've been seeing a lot of chat on one of the Facebook groups to do with a certain game, one of my favourite games of last year, and it's the Exit series, basically. It's Escape Room in a Box.
They're brilliant.
Absolutely love these. I don't think you've played one yet, have you, Lewis?
I haven't. However, I have, for my two brothers-in-laws who recently had their birthdays, I got them both an Exit game, and we're all going to be playing them together soon. So very.
Have you
soon.
Done one yet, Sam?
No, I've not. No. I've nearly picked up Unlock a couple of times, but not done it yet.
No. This is Exit is complete. It's well, same thing, different way. So Exit games literally are one use game. I mean, Unlock's a one use game. Once you played it, you know the secrets, you know the riddles and things like that. But literally, in this, you will have to probably tear up, cut up, poke holes. Do stuff to this game to get through it, and that's what I love. It's an experience. You spend 2 hours, maybe less if you've got bigger brains, but you do spend this time trying to get through this game, and I've loved every one I've played. I think I've done about 4 or 5 of them now with different people, and they've all loved it. But then I start seeing on the Facebook groups how people have been preserving their game. They're like, spend time photocopying, and so they don't have to cut anything up, and just make notes on the side, and they will leave the game pristine so they can pass it on, as they said. And I'm like, well, one, you're losing the fun and the experience of the game, and two, why pass it on when really those people that want to play this game should just go out and buy their own copy? The game doesn't cost a lot.
Or if they want to play it, invite them around to come and play with you. Like, if they're your friends, and that's all, and join them in the experience. That's the whole point. It's not.
It's like going to see a film at a cinema and sneaking two buddies under your coat so they don't have to pay for it. I mean, the designers. The designers and the publishers don't make a lot from these games. I mean, this costs about 14, 15 quid at the most.
12 quid on Amazon at the moment. The Exit
games 11, are, 11 quid at Meeple's Corner.
There you go. Shit, I should have got from Meeple's Corner.
and so they're not going to get a lot out of these games. And I'm just thinking, why preserve it? Why keep it like that? Because you can't play it again. You'll know the secrets. So why give it to someone? And we've witnessed it, haven't we, Lewis? Nigel and Karen was actually given one from their friends. And their friends preserved it.
Why?
Mine all destroyed in the recycling bin.
That's Holly and Jason for you, mate. That's the
Karen does listen, so she'll have a good old giggle.
Yeah. Sorry, I should explain that. So there's some friends of ours who come to our Thursday club down on Ivy Bridge every evening, Thursday, the Imperial in Ivy Bridge, 7 o'clock. Come on down, people. They've got some other friends that they play board games with called Holly and Jason. And we've never met them. We don't know anything about Holly and Jason. But obviously we get a lot of stories about games that they've played with Holly and Jason. So now we all chat about Holly and Jason like we're all the closest of mates. All biggest enemies, you know.
Yeah, the nemesis.
That's how it is. Yeah, bloody Holly.
That Holly again. And it was one of those things. And I've kind of bit my tongue quite a lot when I see these posts coming up. But then someone posted on, they said, what could I do with this used game of Exit now? It's like been cut up and things like that. And then instantly people come back with, why have you done that? Why don't you just photocopy and preserve it? And then you could pass it on to friends. But they did have rebuttals of people coming back. It's like, no, play it how it's meant to be played and cut it up and do whatever. Why pass it on? And then I went in and I finally let rip and went in. I went rip in a nice way. I said, experience the game. The game is meant to be teared up. The game is meant to be poked at, written on, and I have so much great time, have great time doing it with friends, and I buy all my exit games.
Apart
from one that was sent as a review. And
that's the thing, they're designed as a one-off experience. They're like they're like an escape room in your house. And you invite your mates around that you want to experience it with, and you have an experience together, don't you? Like that's that's the beauty of board games. That's why we play board games and not so much computer games, because board games, everyone's together, you're all having a laugh, and you know, you go through an experience together. And you know, something like the exit games, they're not expensive. I mean, photocopying and stuff, it's going to take you what, an hour, 2 hours, and then to sort everything out, make sure you've got everything in the right place. You just think like, well, surely your time's worth more than a fiver an hour, isn't it? Like,
I wouldn't say it'd be an hour. You probably just have to photocopy a few parts.
Well, but is that time? Don't forget the cost of photocopying, Joel. Make sure you take include.
But
that
it's funny when I've brought one out and I played it with lots of different people, and there's the same reaction as like, oh, we might be tearing this up. I said, yep. You sure you want to do that to your game? Yep. Carry on. And they're designed. We need to cut this out. I said, pass me the scissors. I'll do that kind of thing. And I'm just chopping away. And I can hear Sam gritting his teeth in the background. Are you?
No. I was going to say, it's part of the visceral thrill of doing it, isn't it? It's part of the game experience to kind of tear the card. And okay, some might see it as a sort of slightly cynical business way of saying, oh, now you're going to have to buy another one if you want. You know, whoever wants it is going to have to buy a fresh one. But I think you're right. I mean, it's one of those weird things where it's crossing the boundary, isn't it? It's a bit like saying, well, I'll buy the DVD, but then I'll lend the DVD to my friend. It's kind of a similar kind of thing. These are very disposable things, and if they are disposable, they've been designed that way, then, you know, it's I don't know, it's just one of those. I can see both sides of the story a little bit. I think half the people that are kind of saying, why would you want to destroy it? They've just got a bit of an anti thing about damage. You know, we're all very fastidious about trying to keep our stuff in really good condition, especially like game cards and stuff. So the idea of tearing one or damaging one deliberately is anathema to most gamers. And I think that's probably more to do with it than it is to be about, oh, well, I want to be able to sell it and get £5 back for it or something.
Yeah.
I think most gamers don't care about the money. They care about the sheer act of desecrating something that you've paid money for. Yeah. So I think it's a horses for courses thing, isn't it? A little bit.
I think there's a lot of people who go to huge extents to keep all their games pristine and, you know, perfect. And, you know, I've got a lot of games, and I want to look after them. But, you know, sometimes, you know, whenever I'm playing with my family and friends, they will sort of mock me for sort of going, oh, don't bend that card. Oh, try not to lick over there, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's not because I'm like, you know, really anal about keeping everything pristine. Things don't have to be pristine, but I want them to last a long time. And you know, I'm not like, you know, I've got some limited edition games that, you know, are selling for, you know, ridiculous amounts of money on eBay and things, but that I'm never going to sell them. And it's not for me. It's not about, you know, games are there to be played. I don't collect games. I kind of do as a kind of a side kind of line, if that makes sense. It's not like, you know, action figures, keep them pristine in a box. It's like, no, they're there to be played with. Like, that's the same with games, you know. So, you know, I take care of them, but, you know, it's not kind of the end all, you know. Sometimes games will get somewhere over time, and that's fine. That's just what happens. But you want them to last as long as possible. But in a game like the exit games, I mean, they're designed to get the experience out of them. And part of the experience, as Sam's saying, is bending stuff and poking holes in it and working out how to which bits to push and all that jazz. So, yeah, that's what they're designed for.
And there's the Pandemic Legacy, going back to that again. There's actually parts in that it says rip up this card or destroy this card. Yeah. And it makes me laugh because there's someone we know deliberately going online saying, oh, we're not destroying these cards. We've put them in an envelope saying torn up cards. And kept it. I was like, why? What are you going to do with them afterwards? Oh, well, maybe they can be used. No, they can't. They literally, you tear them up for a reason because you can't go back on it again. And when he actually had finished it, and then he looked back at it, he says, okay, hands up. There's no point keeping the cards. I might as well torn up. But the fact that he couldn't bring himself to do that, literally, he then had to come around and say, oh, yeah, we'll just put them in an envelope just to be. So no, tear it up, burn it, do whatever you need to. I remember we gave you the cards to tear up, didn't you?
I don't like necessarily tearing things up, but you know, yeah, I think the exit games are kind of the exception, and it does feel like sacrilege tearing things up. But in the exit games, the exit games are much more physical. Like I said, they're kind of escape room kind of thing, aren't they? And you know, you need to be sort of getting that kind of physical element to them, and that's kind of how you do it.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So we're all in agreement. No argument here. Cool. Fake board games then. Going from destroying board games to fake ones. What you got there, Lewis?
Well, yeah, so it's quite interesting. It's been in the news over the last month. It's kind of got bigger and bigger. Some of the larger publishers have been talking about some of the bigger games are essentially getting ripped off. And then people that are kind of getting sold online through sort of eBay and stuff for unbelievably cheap prices. Then people are sort of getting the games and they're sort of saying, well, the quality of these games isn't that great. And the problem is, it's a lot of the big sellers that are getting ripped off. So it's the kind of your big entry level ones. So the ones that they were talking about were Catan and Seven Wonders. Mm-hmm. And I saw a copy of Splendor as well that had been done as well, and they basically just scan the image and then just of the box and all the components and just redo it, and you can't really tell unless you put them side by side. So it's really quite interesting. But at the same time, you know, the card isn't as thick, and you know, the inserts aren't as good, and the artwork just looks dull, which is quite an interesting thing, and the effect it's going to, you know, potentially have on the industry. I mean, I think the interview that I saw, they sort of estimated that they were sort of losing about, you know, 10-15% of their sales to it. I mean, that's kind of huge in a in an industry with low margins and relatively small population that they're selling to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's talking about the same interview. So a magazine interviewed the CEOs of Asmodee, North America, or Asmodee, the agglomerate in the way. And it's quite fascinating hearing what their side of it and how much they are losing out to fake board games and rip-offs. And I've actually seen it in the UK, some people posting up on the Facebook page saying, yeah, I got this, I think it was Pandemic was a big culprit. And they're saying, does this look right, kind of thing? They'll be showing images and there'd be off-printed counters or, as cards say, not to the best quality. And people like say, no, send that back. That's a rip-off kind of thing. And and then this interview came out and highlighted the full extent of it. I mean, I've always known China is quite notorious for ripping off board games because they have no laws really for copyright.
It's more they've got the facilities, isn't it? I mean, they've got all the components there because they make the original components, and so it's very easy for someone just to do it. And they've got the facilities to then do their own print run in multiple factories because they've got huge numbers of factories and things over there. So, but yeah, it does seem to where, or that's what the interview was implying, where it was stemming from.
Yeah. Sam's dead.
So look out. Look out.
Hmm? Sam fell asleep.
I was just trying to work out who it was that let out a sneaky little pop just then.
For once, it wasn't me, I don't think.
No, it weren't me.
I do sometimes sneak. I don't think it was me.
It's either that or it was a sneaky frog croaking. I heard something. We'll have to listen to the playback when you're done now.
Staying in. Oh, dear. Cool. Nearly to the end. Right. Compo time.
Yes.
So we had some good entries from people wanting to win a copy of Clank in Space. And we got some feedback as well. So someone sent feedback in. So Lewis, do you want to highlight some of your interesting feedback?
I do. So let's see what people have said. I have a little selection of things here. So we've got that's a nice, friendly atmosphere. That's nice. Enjoyed the walkthrough reviews of games. That's always good. That sounds very good. What else have we got here? Let's have a little look. We've got just recently come across your podcast. I'm enjoying it. Look forward to diving into your back catalogue. Now, there's a promise. And someone just says, love the show, just keep up the great work.
Yeah.
So that's pretty and all sounding pretty good.
We got Michael, American Michael, you known him before. He's snuck in a persona name.
So we think it must be him because it seems to be the same complaint that he always has.
Please, less.
We know you're there, Michael.
Yeah. He's asking for please less outtakes at the end of the podcast. One or two is enough. He's like, yeah, Mike, we know it's you.
It's definitely him. He's always complaining about the outtakes.
No,
it's Michael. It wasn't Michael. It was somebody else. Unless he really has entered in a persona. He does like Clank in Space. Yes. We did tell him he couldn't enter.
Is your dog scratching itself? Or are you scratching yourself?
No, I'm shaking the bowl full of competition entries ready to draw the winner.
I thought your dog was having a good old scratch behind the ear then.
Yeah. Just probably just me.
Right.
Right. Shall I draw it?
Are you ready then?
Are you ready?
Drum roll.
I'm going to pick one. Oh, I'm really excited. My heart's going. I'm not even entered in the bowl. It's this one here. The winner is Alberto Cacodrillo.
Oh, you picked the hardest name.
I did, yeah.
Good thing you read it out then.
Yeah. Well done, Alberto.
Well done, Alberto. Oh. Fantastic. We shall be forwarding your details onto Meeple's Corner and they should be getting in contact with you.
Yeah, I do hope you ship live out in the UK.
I do. I hope you live in the UK as well.
I'm thinking back of it, we never mentioned about being in the UK to send it.
So. We didn't, did we? Oh, no.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens.
Oh, God. I'll email him. Oh, no. This isn't going to go well at all.
And it's a good outtake here, and I probably can't use it because it
no, definitely, really definitely awful. Don't use it. Next time, next competition, we have to make sure we state that. Good. So well done to our winner. Please let us know how you enjoy the game. We'd like to hear from you. You can put things in the comments on the website, or you can send us another email.
Yeah.
Come join the Clank Lovers Club.
Well, yeah, Clank in Space is a good one, so he'll enjoy it, I reckon.
Just watch the jigsaw puzzle piece bought bits because they fudge up really easy.
Yeah, tell me about that. Bit tight, aren't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
And they don't fit back in the box very well.
No, there's only one way I've found to do it, and it does just about go back in, but there's a secret way. You've got to discover it.
Right.
Part of the
trust
challenge.
Me. Trust me.
It does we need a YouTube video for boxing.
Clank. Not
unboxed,
just boxing.
Yeah, maybe I'll make that my first YouTube video for the
Yay!
Channel.
Yeah,
yeah. It's fun doing YouTube channels because then you realise how ugly you are.
Oh, it would just be the box, not me. Yeah. You see my hands.
Oh, you realise how ugly your hands are. I was like, oh, yeah. Quite cut up from work. Okay, that is it, gentlemen. So,
lovely job.
Let's just quickly close this out. So thank you for all of you listening. Pop along to Facebook page, Twitter account, which is mainly done by me. We got the Guild, which is 24, I think, something like that.
Four.
I've lost all the end intro stuff, have I?
No, yeah, it's all gone.
It's all gone. It's been wiped.
No one's on Board Game Geek anymore, so don't matter. No.
So yes, Facebook, Twitter is active. I have been Joel Wright. You can find me on Twitter as Devon Dice UK mainly now.
I've been Sam Freeman. You can find me at Spoon of Milk on Twitter.
And I've been Lewis Jones, and I don't do Twitter or Facebook.
Lucky you.
He does do it actually, because he stalks me on Twitter and goes, oh yeah, what's all this about you doing that? I was like, crying out loud, get your own Twitter account and stop stalking. Well,
I keep an eye.
Anyway, so yes, join us next time for the next episode, and with more shenanigans going on. Goodbye and see you later.
Awesome, done.
Very
Let's
good.
Do it.
Right, I am recording now.
Are we on record already?
Just in time to hear Lewis's plate scrapings.
Yeah. That's finishing. Wait.
So I'm just recording to it so I don't forget.
Are you going to put this on the bloody intro again?
Yeah. Just like having penises at the beginning and the last one.
Yeah. Was it penises or farts? I can't quite remember.
Oh, you were farts. I done one with Lewis, the other Lewis, and there was penises at the beginning.
I mean, I don't want to ask.
It was just so comical what we were talking about, and then I started recording, and it just caught this bit as it came in. You need to listen to it. It's so funny. And I was like, that's an awesome intro. We're going to leave that. So,
yeah.
I heard it.
You heard it.
I've got the competition entries here ready to draw.
How many did we get? How many?
Nine.
There was nine in the end.
10, but that was some advertisement that I missed.
So we ought to sell competitions based purely on the fact that you've got an awesome chance of winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't bring a drink down and I have a sore throat.
I've got one. I just made one. Do you want some of mine?
Yeah, okay. Right.
I thought you wanted my drink. What are you doing?
Terrible. Anyone got a good title?
No.
Didn't realise we needed to do homework. Oh, dear. Freezing balls is currently the only thing in my mind.
Freezing balls. I guess Joel is in a shed and you're in a freezing house.
Not very family appropriate, but...
Yeah. That's with a Z as well, so that makes it cool.
It doesn't make it cool, yeah.
are you going to twist the intro into making me talk about my farts again?
Yes.
I thought so. Good.
It's just so funny. Did you hear it? It was at the end. I put them in at the end and it's just like, oh.
I didn't...
When you were sat there talking and you done two, and I was like, oh, I really hope he stops because it's going to be really awkward in a minute.
Yeah, but anyone who didn't know me would have no idea. They'd be like, oh, it's just sort of squeak in the background. But you highlighted it and then put it at the beginning of the episode just to make sure people didn't miss.
Oh, dear. Right.
I could have a serious medical condition. You could be mocking my serious medical condition. I don't, but I could.
I'll probably still mock it anyway.
That's true.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.